Finale, Chapters 18 and 19. Aboard the Beast Ship, Sergeant Magron strongly disliked the bizarrely painted spaceship, both for its exterior and for its interior design and furnishing. It did not surprise him to be told that it was chaos altered. Such unnatural cleanness of line was an affront. He had again removed his helmet, but elected to remain suited. He stood at the rear of the cabin, looming over the frightened pair, the trader and the navigator. He was a space marine. They did not have the option of disobeying him or arguing with him, but there were things they had to explain. One was that, for the time being, there was no dropping into the warp and no need to get out of range of the black sun. Magron was soon able to see the phenomenon for himself as Kaladin guided the ship through the Rose Cluster, the mysterious force which had drawn them into it no longer showing itself. "This is a perilous region," he said to Ruglow. "Find spacesuits for you and the navigator in case of attack." Ruglow did so, taking the opportunity for a brief exploration of his newly acquired vessel, and particularly of the contents of the hold. He returned to find Kaladin excited. They had cleared the Rose Cluster by several times its diameter, and he had found space trails, the equivalent of warp trails, many of them all leading in the same direction. Magron recalled the demon's talk of a big space battle. Had the Imperium really attempted to invade the Eye? "Follow them," he ordered. "They may lead us to normal space." Kaladin obeyed. The Eye, with its abnormal space colouring, its formations of stars and gas sheets, flowed past. He felt discomforted by the lack of a cocoon or of any of the usual iconography of a starship. The painted craft was almost a blasphemy, a denial of holiness. A pleasant musical chime sounded from somewhere on the display, unlike any standard warning signal, and confusing those present. Eventually, Kaladin discovered it was meant to draw his attention to the contact tabulator. A ship was approaching at great speed. "Suit up," Magron ordered, when given the news. While they struggled into them, he stepped forward to watch the viewscreen. The ship came in sight, on the magnifier at first, but soon it hove to, broadside of them, looming over the little rainbow ship, and its gargantuan nature became evident. It was a warship, a battleship of some sort, but it had been built in no yard of the Imperium. Its turrets followed some wild and insane plan, jutting out at crazy angles. Its prow was a huge mass made for ramming, though hammer-headed instead of wedge-shaped, as if it was actually intended that the ship should destroy itself along with the enemy. Although, in fact, it would have brushed aside the painted starship like a fly. It was, without doubt, a chaos vessel. Ruglow and Kaladin stared frozen, and Magron breathed a prayer as a weapons sponson rotated towards them. But it failed to fire. Instead, an incredible spectacle played out. The immense warship began to disintegrate. Ragged holes appeared in it. Intricate turrets sagged. Chunks and fragments floated away. The vessel appeared to be dissolving. In less than a minute, it was like a carcass that had been torn apart by scavengers. Horrible to behold, thousands of its crew were deposited, kicking and unprotected into the void, suffocating in droves. Then, something burst from the great holding bay in the warship's belly. A vessel itself as large or larger than the painted spaceship. It appeared as though made of shining brass, but looked more like a beast than a ship. A body of living metal that could flex and turn. A head section was inset with domed insect eyes of a purple colour. Probably observation windows, Kaladin thought. Stumpy legs sprayed out from the main body of hull. It dove at the painted spaceship. "Evasive action! Helmets on!" Magron barked. It was too late. The brass beast ship's attack was savage and swift, but it was not by the use of any weapon. Briefly, its external skin swept across the viewscreen, seemingly composed of metal that seemingly had been allowed to run and then set without benefit of a mould. Then there was a deafening crunching. The drive engine screamed, then stopped. All lights went out. The cabin began to collapse. Kaladin got the impression that the Chaos ship was devouring the vessel as though it were a prey. There was a huge, confused convulsion, a chomping and crunching. Then all was still. There was light again. He found himself lying on a warm, uneven surface. Ruggalo and the Space Marine lay nearby. They were in a long, cavernous space with dull yellow walls that were rough and lumpy. Fragments of the painted ship's interior were scattered and strewn throughout the length of the cabin. The smashed cabin, crumpled bits of the cargo hold, its bins and crates piled in a heap. There was no sign of a crew. It seemed the B-ship had acted all by itself. Kaladin scrambled forward. He found himself looking through the purple dome windows from the inside. He saw the wreckage of the rest of the painted spaceship, the crushed hull, the torn fins, the smashed engines. Like some hungry predator, the beast ship had devoured the tastiest innards of its victim, namely the accommodation and the hold. Though how it had done so with no visible mouth, Kaladin had no idea. He glanced down. There was a recognisable, if minimal, control board. A quirky thought struck him. Had the beast ship been in search of a crew? He heard a whining sound from the rear. It was a drive engine idling. Ruggalo was giggling inanely to see that the painted ship's cargo had accompanied them. Magron strode over.
"Can you explain what has happened, Navigator?" he asked of Kaladin.
Kaladin shook his head. "Nothing makes much sense where we are."
"Is this a ship? Can you pilot it?"
"I think so." Magron nodded. He had travelled in a beast ship before.
"Then resume our course."
There was no seat. Kaladin would have to pilot standing. He took the controls. The engine roared. The beast ship shot forward. The fighting aboard the Rectitude was over. The lacerated and shattered bodies of countless brute men were being expelled into space, thrown through the rents and gaps in the hull of the battleship. Inexplicably, the Chaos battleship which had rammed the Rectitude had melted away. The phenomenon would have to be the subject of analysis later. For now, the prime objective was escaping from the Eye of Terror. Lord Militant Commander Drang, flushed with the excitement of the hand-to-hand struggle, had returned to the bridge to discover that the fighting had reached there too. His admirals and nearly all the bridge crew were dead, defending the navigators, without whom there was no returning home. One of the three had survived. No one seemed to have bothered about the psychers. One had a smashed skull. The others were alive, but only as drooling idiots. The Chaos ship had rammed a huge hole in the Rectitude. Commander Drang began receiving reports. The engineers calculated that a sufficient number of the main stems, which transmitted force through the ship's structure, were undamaged for it to stay in one piece during flight, provided weakened sections were cut away first. The warp screens were repairable. Power had already been restored. The main concern was the drives. Work went on for 3 days. At last, Drang was told what he wanted to hear. 2 of the 4 real space drives and 1 of the 5 warp drives were now working. All of the navigators Drang had brought with him were special. They knew how to find the Cadian Gate. The Rectitude, crippled but undefeated, got underway. Kaladin found that the battleship could achieve the same speed in the warp real space weld that the Wandering Star had, but without the massed trail of the Imperium battle fleet, he would probably never have found his way to the Cadian Gate. Neither would he have dared go through it if it had not been for the Space Marine's insistence. He had fully expected to be set upon by Chaos ships. Whether it was because they themselves were travelling in a Chaos ship, or because the battle fleet, if Magron was right and there was a battle fleet, had already cleared the way, he did not know. One other thing bothered him. Did the beast ship have a warp drive? There was a lever on the panel that might well engage one, but Kaladin could not read the few runes and sigils that were on board. They were unfamiliar, hard to look at. Chaos runes. The beast ship spared obediently through the blue-tinted space. It no longer showed any will of its own. Time passed. Ruggalo slept, but Kaladin and Magron did not. Then the ship began to judder. Ruggalo awoke, alarmed that it might be coming to life. But such was not the case. There was no speed tabulator to tell Kaladin their velocity, but he felt instinctively that they were slowing, decelerating towards the creeping speed that light normally had. Neither was there a viewscreen, only direct vision through the red light blisters. He peered through one of them. It was difficult to tell because of their purple tint, but he thought that the slight blue of space was fading back towards black. Another judder, a violent one this time. They must be leaving the region of the Weld. It was time to jump into the warp. He took hold of the lever and pulled. Nothing happened. At least, nothing he expected. The lever appeared to work nothing. If there was a warp drive, it was inoperative. A chill of fear struck through him, stuck in interstellar space without a warp drive. But there was worse. A hoarse cry came from Ruggalo. He had put his hand against the wall of the beast ship to steady himself. A strip of it had come away in his hand.
It's no stronger than paper!
In almost the same instant, the drive levers Kaladin had been holding broke off, leaving him staring at them stupidly. He looked around at his companions. The ship was dissolving, breaking up.
Helmets on!
It was Magron shouting the order before slamming on his own armoured helm. The process of dissolution was unbelievably rapid. No sooner had they snapped their helmets to the retaining rings in the suits they already wore than ragged holes appeared in the walls of the vessel. Air whooshed in. The matter of which the ship was made was curling and disappearing like paper in a fire. In not more than half a minute, there was no ship at all. Its three occupants, together with a few fragments from Gundrum's ship and most of his trade goods, floated in space. The little group stayed together. There was nothing to make them drift apart in the short term. No one spoke. Ruggalo and Kaladin were too much in shock to do so. They stared at the huge swirl which the Eye of Terror warpstorm presented from here, the source of all their misfortunes. As for Magron, he reflected that he had been in this situation before. Would he be drawn again into the Chaos Realm? But he did not go into Suzanne. Not yet. However, this was not the end. An hour passed. Then, a moving shadow cut off a patch of starlight. For a second time, a giant warship came in to view. Chapter 19. Ends and Stratagems. The small Chaos ship had been spotted as the Rectitude limped through the Cadian Gate. The battleship had immediately changed course, intending to vaporize it before it could reach the Imperium, only to see it spontaneously wither away, as had the Chaos Juggernaut. A party of loaders was dispatched to haul in the detritus remaining with boarding gaffs. Two of the survivors were dragged through the clanging confusion of the largely wrecked space leviathan, still littered with signs of recent carnage, for interrogation by naval intelligence. They seemed unable to explain themselves at first, even when put on the porter rack. Only when administered calming and mind-opening inhalants were they able to tell their remarkable story. For the Space Marine, it was a different matter. All stood back in awe of him. Lord Militant Commander Drang rushed to view him on hearing that he had been brought aboard. When he claimed to be a Marine of the First Founding from 10,000 years ago, a claim supported by the armour he wore, their awe increased 100-fold. But that armour also bore the marks of chaos. Naval intelligence did not presume to carry out an interrogation, and there were none of the Inquisition on board. Sergeant Magron was stripped of his weapons and his armour, and locked in a specially constructed brig from which not even he could break out. Upon their return, he would be handed over to the Dark Angels chapter of the Adeptus Astartes. Fed and rested, Ruggalo and Kaladin were once again ushered into the presence of an officer belonging to Naval Intelligence. He was not either of the pair of officers who had interrogated them earlier. He obviously had needed to recover too. His arm was in a sling, and a cloth poultice covered a gash on his head. His bearing was stiff, showing that he had other injuries, but he was immaculately turned out in tunic, breeches, and jackboots. They had heard that the battleship would soon arrive at the base of Battlefleet Obscurus. The officer made them wait in silence while he read slowly through the interrogation report. Not, they were sure, for the first time. Then he ventured an opinion.
"You both appear to be something of a difficulty."
Ruggalo nodded, clenching his fists.
"I've lost my ship," he said, putting a sob into his voice. "I've lost everything I had. Of course, if you could return my merchandise..."
"Obtained within the Eye of Terror," the officer interrupted in a clipped tone. "You are aware of the penalties for such traffic." Ruggalo had been hoping that the Navy, being a purely military organization, would be uninterested in legalities.
"Well, no, not exactly."
"And you, Navigator Kaladin, you succeeded in finding a way into the Eye and even managed to come back out again. An impressive feat." Kaladin said nothing. The intelligence officer leaned back in his chair, regarding them both with an unreadable expression.
"The Navy may be willing to give you a new ship," he said to Ruggalo, "provided Navigator Kaladin remains your partner."
"Really?"
"Let me put it this way. You two have been through experiences which would have driven most men insane. Yet apart from a recoverable measure of psychic trauma, you are relatively unaffected. Perhaps because..." He did not finish what he had started to say. In his view, the pair had survived simply because they were not intelligent enough to appreciate the full horror of what they had encountered. "Naval intelligence has a use for such as you. Able to make your way within the Eye. In short, we need agents. We are going to send you back in."
"No!"
they both protested together. "The choice is yours, of course," the officer said politely. "But the question is more than one of trading in illicit goods. Anyone known to have contact with those of the Dark Powers is handed over to the Inquisition and put to death. It may not come to that, for refusing the wishes of the Emperor, as formulated by his loyal officers, one is put to death in a more unpleasant way." Ruggalo groaned, and Kaladin stared into space. Lord Militant Commander Drang was curious. A first officer had informed him that not only three individuals, but a stock of Chaos artifacts had been recovered from a dissolving spacecraft. He resolved to examine these artifacts himself. The first officer led him to where the booty was stored, in a chamber that had only just been made airtight. Their boots clanged on the decks as they walked. All around them, the structurally weakened ship creaked and groaned ominously as its unsteady engines pushed it through the warp. On the way, he peered briefly through his monocle. Strange. His impending second meeting with the Calidus assassin, which had beckoned him for so long, was no longer there. Instead, there was something else, something glowing and inexplicable. Could it really be that the assassination edict was to be rescinded, in view of his gallantry?
"Wait here," he told the first officer outside the door to the chamber. Drang went in. The chamber was dank and dimly lit. There were a number of open-topped bins and a line of crates. He went to one of the bins. It was filled with small, bulbous bottles of ribbed glass, containing liquids of various colours. He raised one, inspected it. His monocle flared briefly, responding to the bottle, showing something swirling within, a beverage of some kind. He put it back, carefully. He found a jimmy and levered open the first crate. It contained a jumble of objects, a tetrahedron, which changed shape as he picked it up, and flew out of his hand to rattle on the floor on the other side of the chamber, a sparkling carousal which began to revolve as he lifted it, carrying unrecognizable figures and mounts which changed and mutated all the time. It filled him with distaste, and he let the trinket drop. Here was something which looked slightly familiar, a filigreed cylinder, a little like a telescope. He lifted it to his natural eye. A scene opened up before him, a vast nave, vaster than any he had ever seen, so vast it contained two immense titans, full of bustle, and at the far end, he snatched the instrument away, shock on his face.
"No, it cannot be.
For a moment, he didn't realise that the telescope had lifted itself out of his hand. Only then did it strike him how much it resembled a larger version of his monocle. And when the two merged, he tried to pull both away, to wrench the monocle out of his eye socket if need be. But his hands seemed to encounter only a yielding liquid. What he could see through the joint instruments now struck such terror into him as he had never felt before. A caressing voice sounded in the depths of his being. "This is what it has been leading to, Commander. This was the real meaning of your lust for glory. Did your mother not tell you never to buy anything alien?" How Lord Militant Commander Drang wished now that he could meet death at the hands of the kindly Calidus assassin. Alive and fully conscious, he was drawn kicking and screaming into the war. Lord Militant Commander Investicone was thinking of Drang as he lounged in his quarters in Base Pacificus. He was thinking that he never did get to have the pleasure of that final duel. Still, he was sure that Drang met his end, as he would have wished, with a power saber in his hand. Battlefleet Pacificus had returned to dock several days before. He had submitted his report to the High Lords. Now he awaited their final message. He reached out to refill his wine glass from a bottle he had been keeping for 10 years. As he did so, he noticed a flicker of movement from the other side of the room. A young man stood there, though he was not naked this time.
"So, it's you," Investicone murmured,
and he smiled.
The Chekamazan Zuno, the Feathered Lord, ragged and tattered from his bloody fight with the Bloodthirster, sagged and lashed out in rage, while his fellow Lords of Change whirled around him, mocking and jeering.
"The great inventor! A weaver of stratagems that fall apart!
With a single space marine, the Emperor has foiled all your plans!
Maker of matter!"
One stood before him.
"Did you think you were the first to make false matter? It cannot be made stable. The cosmic balance is not upset so easily."
The great inventor, the weaver of stratagems that fall apart, was a young greater demon of Zench. He had committed the sin of overconfidence, and for that he was to be punished.
"You have displeased the great conspirator. He has given us power over you. He has revealed your secret name."
And as they mocked, as they intoned the unpronounceable syllables that robbed him of potency, the Feathered Lord wilted and fled into a wilderness peopled only by gibbering mindless demons which bubbled in and out of existence, moment by moment. There was only one end for a Dark Angel who had submitted to chaos, that is to say, a fallen angel, once he fell into the hands of his chapter. Taken to the Great Fortress Monastery on the Rock, the only remaining fragment of the Dark Angel's homeworld of Caliban, Abdazul Magron spent many months in a cold dungeon, interrogated by the Great Chapter's chaplains and librarians. The interrogation was exhaustive. It used any available means where it was suspected that Magron might be holding back information or harbouring secret thoughts. Magron made a complete confession and repented his loss of faith in the Emperor. The harsher methods used on him dragged no complaint from his lips. He said nothing in mitigation of his sin. But finally, he was allowed extreme unction, offered the last blessings, and given a quick death. There are secrets, known not even to the inner circle of the fallen angels, and one final secret is known only to the God Emperor himself. Deep, deep within the rock, at the centre of what was once the planet Caliban, lies a sealed, unreachable chamber. Here lies sleeping the Chapter Primarch, Lionel Johnson, carried away by the Watchers in the Dark on that terrible day when the Dark Angel's chapter tore itself apart. Only the God Emperor, and possibly the unconscious mind of the Primarch, through which the God Emperor had acted, knew what had nudged and guided the frozen body of Sergeant Magron on his long journey into the Eye of Terror, a secret weapon aimed at the heart of chaos. Only them, and perhaps one other. In a lofty, secluded palace far off in the warp, a truly ancient Chikamazan Zono nodded and blinked in admiration for the Emperor of Mankind. The Lord of Change was one of the first ever to be created by the Great Lord of Change, and was reckoned by some to be almost as wise and cunning as Zench himself. He, it was, who had manipulated the young, inexperienced great inventor, and then discarded him. He acknowledged that the Emperor was a god in his own right, worthy to be an ally of Zench himself, so great was his foresight, so subtle his ability to pinpoint cusps which, with the slightest of nudges, could deflect events onto another course. He had even utilized the forces of chaos to maneuver his actors into position. But the game was still afoot, and would be for millennia. The Emperor had manipulated chaos, but the greater demon, in turn, had manipulated the Emperor. There were manipulations within manipulations, and only he who failed to see them all would lose. The Emperor was a great lord, but he was shackled to the husk of his material form, kept alive by mortals who feared to lose their protector. Eventually, their efforts would fail. The husk would die, and the Emperor would be released, unfettered into the heavenly realms. Then, the true war would begin. The Emperor would exert himself to cancel out the four chaos powers and integrate them into a sane and harmonious whole, thereby harmonizing the psyche of mankind. But the heavenly masters did not want to be so absorbed. What was sanity compared with the glorious insanity of the separate chaos gods, forever at war with one another? The ancient demon was patient, as strategists must be. His ultimate aim was the defeat of the Emperor. To that end, he had set in train impulses which no one but he and blessed Zench himself could see. In his lofty, secluded palace, Chikamazan Zono watched and waited. Okay, everybody, that's a wrap. I hope you've enjoyed this novel. It's a classic. It's like, for instance, that last section there. He seems to have included two endings for the Zench demon, which you might think is quite themey because it's Zench, or it might just be an error, and he liked them both, so he just left them both in. So you got the one where it's acting like it's some ancient demon carrying on plotting, and you got another one where it's saying he's a young demon and has been punished for his hubris. So yeah, as I said before, this is a very imaginative book. There's a lot of interesting stuff in there, a lot of interesting scenes, and you've got to treat it like a foundational text for 40K lore and the 40K universe, because this book inspired other writers who then inspired other writers and so on until we get to the current situation we have now, where it's a fairly fleshed out universe with some pretty decent rules in place in terms of what happens and what doesn't. At the time of writing, that wasn't so. Things were a lot more fluid. Particularly like, what is the Eye of Terror and what is chaos? But I like how he approaches chaos. I like how you see that these certain elements of the 40K universe were pretty set in stone, or at least there was a good idea about how they would function. And it's just been worked on since then. Now, as I say, the author passed away, unfortunately. But he did have an outline, apparently, for a sequel to this book with the same characters. So I'm going to read through that for you guys now. Barrington J. Bailey, An Age of Adventure. A theme outline for a proposed novel set in the same universe as Eye of Terror, after the events in that book. A project of far-reaching implications is afoot. Under a secrecy so total, those involved in it, drawn chiefly from the Adeptus Mechanicus, but also mysterious unknown cabals deep in the covert hierarchy of the Administratum, do not know under whose aegis it is being prosecuted, or who has set it in motion. The High Lords fear for the future of the Imperium. The Emperor has not spoken for a long time. It is an article of faith that he watches over the wide-flung human realm, guarding it from the powers of chaos. But it cannot be denied that his physical form continues slowly to deteriorate over the centuries, despite all efforts on the part of the complex organization charged with maintaining the throne globe. What if he weakens to the point where he can no longer manifest as a god in the Materium?
and can no longer direct the Astronomicon. Without the Emperor, there can be no Imperium. There is also a need to guard against a second threat. More ships than usual are coming to grief in the warp. Some techno-mages predict a return of the violent warp storms that for centuries prevented interstellar travel and cut Earth off from the rest of the galaxy. A plan has been devised, not to restore the Emperor to health, that is impossible, but to open the possibility of reincarnation. In the vast warren of laboratories surrounding the throne room are minute scraps of tissue containing the Emperor's genes, frozen in stasis at the time of the throne globe was constructed. From these scraps, 5 clone bodies are grown to adult form. Then they are exposed to the Emperor's mighty spirit in a ceremony similar to the soul binding administered to astropaths. The intention is that the Emperor will imbue each with his own individuality. They will not be as powerful as the original, of course, but they might grow more powerful with time. Neither is it believed that the operation will comprise the Emperor's unity in any way. He is a god, and these are his avatars. Should the Imperium become ungovernable, either by reason of the Emperor's morbidity or because the warp storm sweeping the galaxy, then each of the 5 segmentae will be ruled by one of the avatars or brothers as Segmentum Emperor. This device was used in the late Roman Empire to ease administration. Has incarnation really taken place? It is easily settled. The adult clone bodies are in a state of sleep and have received no upbringing or education, but after the ceremony of binding, they arise, walk, and talk. The avatars are to be informed of who they really are and then sent on their way. No formal appointments are made. The reasoning is that because of their unique qualities, they will find their way to rulership should the crisis emerge. Only 4 are sent out. The mysterious project director tells his underlings that one of the clones is deficient and is to be destroyed. However, those entrusted with the task find they cannot kill a reborn emperor. Secretly, they send him out of the palace alone, unwitting of who he really is. This scheme has an obvious resemblance to the creation of the Primarchs 10,000 years earlier, and it contains some danger that the Chaos Powers manage to intervene, subtly influencing the brothers as they grow in their fetal tubes, I guess. If that is true, the stage is set for a 4-way or even 5-way civil war at some time in the future. The brothers are, of course, immortal. Of course. Already, the reader might guess that there is something not quite right. The Avatar Project is so secret that even the High Lords do not know about it. It is conducted within the Imperial Palace itself, in the Wheels Within Wheels manner of the Imperium. And once it is completed, the logic of total secrecy is carried to its conclusion. All traces of the project is wiped out, all those involved in it liquidated. Those who ordered the killings, whoever they are unaware that the avatar they ordered destroyed was, in fact, saved. Centuries pass. We come up to the present, when the hapless duo Ruggalo and Kaladin from the Eye of Terror are injected, kicking and screaming back into the Eye to act as spies. Among the characters they encounter in the Eye are ex-Commander Militant Drang, who at the end of the previous novel had been dragged bodily into the warp. While there, he suffered the most terrible torments as warp demons played with him. Now he has been bumped somewhere in the Eye, enduring double possession, for demons of both Nurgle and Zench are using his body as a battleground. Driven quite insane, still seized by an obsessive admiration for Space Marines, now for Chaos Legionaries, he plays out his talent for command at the head of a ghost or zombie army. Eugene Excelsior, a devil-may-care adventurer with a casual but very positive outlook on life. He has no idea why he lives long. Nice. Okay. So it's very much like Sensei sort of thing. It's that vibe. He has no idea why he has lived longer than other people or why fortune smiles on him as he does. He gads about the galaxy in a spaceship, without using a navigator, content to simply drop out of the warp at random. This is how he comes to be in the Eye, where he appears just in time to save the duo's bacon in some awful scrape they have got themselves into. He is, of course, the rejected avatar, but he knows little of his origins, being content to enjoy life and adventure. He is unflustered by the horrors of the Eye and seems to revel in its strangeness. He waves aside the pessimism of Ruggalo and Kaladin, as well as the grimness of the Imperium and the Hell universe around them. This is an age of adventure, he tells them. The best age there has ever been. One should laugh at fate, not fear it. Nice. I like it. It's positive. It's good. The story develops. There is a flurry of warp storms. Meanwhile, the 4 avatars, conscious of their destiny, have been moving into position. Two of them are already Segmentum commanders. When the Segmenta are cut off from one another, each has a different facet to his personality, including serious flaws. When the crisis is over and communication restored, each announces his divinity and claims that he is, in truth, the Emperor Reborn, while the others are imposters. Such is their immense charisma that they pull it off. Fighting begins in a four-way war, which will tear the Imperium apart. At the same time, Eugene Excelsior remembers who he is. He tells his companions that he is the true Emperor. The other clones are tainted by the Chaos Powers in an attempt to sabotage the project and pervert the reincarnated soul of the Emperor. That is why it was found necessary to destroy him. Ruggalo and Kaladin are caught up in a prolonged drama. The avatars have an attraction to one another. They are unable to resist the urge to stage a climax in which they meet personally. Eugene Excelsior is the sole survivor of this confrontation. He kills all the others. Then comes another mismatched piece of the puzzle. There never had been an avatar project. True, five near-identical individuals had been grown in the Emperor's palace, but they could not have been clones of the Emperor. No such genetic material was available. A risky situation of that kind was inconceivable. It begins to look as if Excelsior is himself a child of chaos, designed to replace the Emperor one day, and the whole drama of the five brothers a diversionary tactic, part of an elaborate plot. Fearing that this is so, Ruggalo himself tries to kill his friend, Eugene. Excelsior blithely shrugs off the attempt and wanders off to continue his life of adventure as before, and perhaps to wait. And that's the end of the outline that he had for the other book. Now, he wouldn't have been able to do this because it's too law-shattering an event. You know, it's like Age of Apostasy level. But I like this is where his mind's going, and you can see again, no doubt that this guy has had some, even if a small influence, an influence on the direction of 40k lore and Black Library's efforts, you know. And this is very much drawing on the sort of Sensei project, I guess, similar, you know. And you can see some of the foundational things that have been put in place at this point, and then they've been developed later on. So again, this book, it's got its flaws, don't get me wrong, but I like the brutality of some of the moments. I like the demonic, horrible perversion of some of the moments, which I don't think you get a lot of these days when they cover chaos stuff. Sometimes you do, don't get me wrong. Like Graham McNeil did a great job with that whole thing with the captured women giving birth to Iron Warrior Space Marine babies and stuff like that, and various other things there is. But this one's got some really, really brutal stuff. And, you know, no holds barred, you know, it was just like straight up, boom, you know, this is what's happening. You're in this world now, which I like. So again, it's flawed. It's got errors, but I think you can excuse that based on the time it was written and where it's coming from in terms of, you know, the development of Games Workshop and the background and lore team and Black Library. So yeah, I hope you've enjoyed this. The next one will be Demon World. I'm thinking about how to do it. I might do a different voice for the narration voice, or I might use my own throughout. I'm not sure, but the voices themselves, I've got most of them down. Like I say, getting a girl to do the voices is somewhat difficult because at the minute I'm single. And I like to co-opt my companions into assisting me. But to do a whole novel is, even if I had one, a girl available for service at this moment, it would be a big ask to get her to like read vast sections. You know, doing a short story is a bit of a laugh, you know what I mean? It's just something to do between, you know, I don't want to get into my personal life. It's something to do on a weekend, you know, something fun. But like, that's been my experience anyway. But like to get someone to sit there and go through a whole novel with you, because these take days. I mean, hours and hours and hours to record and stuff. It's a bit of a big ask, so I'm probably going to end up doing the voice myself. I might try and do some like some special effects stuff, some jiggering about with the audio recording, so I can make it sound more girlish, I guess. But we'll see how it goes. But that'll be coming in a week or two from this recording. I'm not going to go and rush straight into it. I want a little bit of a break because this has distracted me from other subjects that I want to cover. And I want to do a couple of lore videos and some review videos and some other bits and bobs that I've been putting off because I wanted to get this finished, which I thought I'd finish sooner. But, you know, we are where we are. Anyway, I hope you have enjoyed it. Thank you to everybody supporting the channel. You can see your names here. Big benefit to me, lads. I really appreciate it. It really helps me out. And if anyone else would like to join this champion of heroes, this legion of gods then please consider becoming a... the fuck am I talking about? Please consider becoming a member on YouTube or on the Patreon. And if you join the live chat and you're not wrenched up or wrencher, and if you join Discord and you haven't got like a special role or anything, do let me know, and I'll give you a special role in Discord and stuff. But and if you are a supporter, your opinion counts more than normal people, at least to me, in my heart. That's how special you are to me. All right. I'll see you later. Thanks very much for watching. Have a great week and a great weekend whenever you happen to be listening to this. There'll be more coming soon. Please do give the video a like and subscribe if you're not subscribed. And do let me know in the comments what you thought. Some of the best bits, some of the nicest bits you liked, some of the things you didn't like, which I would appreciate as well. It's interesting to hear. And Demon World will be the next one by Ben Counter, which is also a classic, one of my favourites. I don't know whether you're detecting a theme, but I like chaos stuff. It's more interesting than Imperial stuff. But the Imperial stuff is good too. Anyway, I will see you later. Thanks very much for watching. Cheers. Bye-bye.